Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Those days between Christmas and New Year's tend to be a bit more quiet, even boring. And the psychologist and neurologist Ian Robertson says that's a good thing. Embracing boredom, even if it's a bit uncomfortable first, is good for you. Ian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Why is it when we feel boredom that we don't like it? Because it always seems to have been that way, even before social media.
Yes, exactly. So boredom is a state of where there's restlessness, a slightly negative feeling, and low arousal. So there's a feeling that we want to be doing something, but we don't know what it is or we can't do it. And that is a state that can very quickly change into one of dreamy fantasies, for example. So it doesn't have to be boredom. Boredom is the state that happens when we find a period of quietness without a current goal or current rewards to be unpleasant. But it's possible to change the what they call the valence, the pleasantness, unpleasantness of that by our attitude to it.
So does that mean that there's some mechanism in our brain when we're not doing anything that makes us feel this way, that's kind of saying, no, you should be doing something?
Well, if we're always on, if our brain is used to always occupying itself with external demands, responding to texts, responding to social media, in that situation, our attention is controlled externally. And if that's what we're used to, then our brain, the state of not having a current goal or a current stimulus that we're responding to can be aversive, make you feel restless and jumpy, and that, you know, you lose your phone and that kind of feeling of a panic that happens. And that's an unpleasant state. But it's all about what your brain is used to. If you can get into the lazy mindset of a holiday, for instance, or a lazy weekend where you allow yourself to not have your attention controlled externally in this way, that can easily become a positive experience, and it's actually very, very good for your brain as well and for your well-being.
Mm. So, yeah, so in a way, calling it boredom, because we have such negative associations with boredom, it's more like giving yourself the chance to just have a bit of a think.
Yes, that's right. So that's when we don't have anything to do. There is, of course, the boredom of work, of having or some task that we find we don't enjoy doing and having to do it. There's that kind of boredom. Let's set that aside. But the boredom that comes, say, you know, between Christmas and New Year, maybe when you're not going to work and you've not anything to do, and you're kind of twiddling your thumbs and saying, you know, what can I do? That's a real opportunity to explore the internal world, as opposed to constantly be engaged with the external world, which is what our technology makes us do. And that's about allowing yourself to fantasize. I wonder, you know, what could I do? Allowing yourself to daydream, allow yourself to explore past memories and autobiographical memories. Now, there's a risk in that, because if your brain is primed when it's let loose like that, it's primed to go to unresolved conflicts, which tend to be things that kind of have negative emotions associated with them. So the risk there is that we end up ruminating over something bad that's happened in the past. So we have to be careful about that and use our attention carefully, because it is a fact that if you're a wandering mind, if you don't mean it to wander, is an unhappy mind because of this tendency of the brain to default to conflict or negative problems that are lurking in the background.
Mm, our brains don't do us a lot of favors, really, do they?
Well, we've little choice. Our brains are really it's the most complicated thing in the known universe, and the number of patterns of connections in your brain exceeds the number of atoms in the universe. So it's fabulously complex entity in the universe that has as much to explore inside it as outside it. But you know, just like if you travel in space, you have to be a well-trained astronaut. If you travel inside, you have to become skilled at essentially controlling your attention.
Yeah,
and what you pay attention to determines your emotions and your behavior and your performance. So that's why things like mindfulness training and yoga and learning to control your attention and not allowing your attention to be constantly controlled by the tech masters is very, very good for our well-being and has profound effects on the brain.
Yeah, and as for those profound effects on the brain, is it too simplistic to say that, generally speaking, the use of screens is making us stupider?
Well, what is making us stupider is having our attention constantly controlled externally and never lasting very long. So there's different types of attention in the brain. One of them is called sustained attention. And that's your ability to override tedium and to say, read for half an hour the pages of a dense book or a textbook or studying. That ability to override the hunger in the brain has for novelty and change, which the tech masters harness and make money from it. If our ability to take internal control and sustain our attention, that is like a muscle that has to be trained. The problem is, and the more we train it, the more capable your brain is of combining information, of thinking new thoughts, of solving problems. If it's always bite-sized chunks of attention, you're limiting your cognitive capacities. And there is evidence of a reduction in the academic capacities of children in the PISA studies since about 2000, whereas for the century before then, the IQs went up by about 40%, but now we're seeing a decline. And it seems that part of that story is that we're our attention, our ability to sit and pay attention without it being controlled by novelty or change or stimulus or games or rewards, that internal ability is being degraded. That muscle is being weakened in the brain, and that's extremely bad for not only our cognitive capacities, but also our emotional well-being. Because if you can't control your attention, it means you're much more the victim of external stimuli or of internal stimuli to do with conflicts and negative emotions that will drag your attention to them. So you become a complete ping pong ball, if you like. That in the worst scenario, either your attention is controlled by screens, by alerts, by likes, by scrolling, or it's controlled by internal ruminations and memories and worrying thoughts and things like that. That's probably part of the mechanism why we have this terrible increase in anxiety in younger people who do this stuff much more than people of my age do, for example. So it used to be the case that middle-aged people were the unhappiest, and young people and older people were the happiest. That's the kind of U-shaped curve. In the last 15 years, young people have become as unhappy as middle-aged people, and it's only old buffers of my age who are relatively happy and not plagued by anxiety, and who still have the capacity to pay attention over time. And the cognitive capacities of older people have risen by about 20 years in the last 20 years, for various other reasons, health reasons, etc. So we're in this really difficult situation where young people are, because partly because their attention is being degraded by by giving it over to the tech lords, don't have the capacity to deploy their attention internally, and keep control of their emotions and of their, of what they're thinking about.
And also do things like read a whole book, that kind of thing.
Yes. I mean, I must ask my colleagues in Trinity in the humanities, but I believe even in the elite universities, the Ivy League universities in the States now, the professors cannot prescribe whole books to students. They just don't have the sustained attention capacity to, it's an alien concept to them to sit down and read a 400-page book, you know, and so they have to be given chunks of information, bits of books to read, because their attention spans have been degraded.
Is there then a tipping point with this, Ian? If a young person grows up, as many of them have, or most of them have, you know, within the digital era, and has that muscle become so degraded that it can't be saved past a certain point?
No, fortunately, the human brain has huge neuroplasticity throughout life. So it's possible. There's nothing in any condition that you cannot learn or improve. And conversely, you cannot lose if you don't exercise it. So yes, you can learn to pay attention, and you're not doomed, if you like, to have this bite-sized attention span. But the only downside of that, it takes effort. It's like physical training in the gym. It takes effort, you know, to override that hunger for novelty and hunger for stimulus. It takes effort. You have to build it up slowly and do the stuff. And effort, of course, can be aversive for people. They want the quick fix rather than the slow burn of doing something and then getting a reward way down the line that takes a lot of effort to get there. That's the challenge. It's getting over that hump of the effort that requires to regain your attention capacity.
Yeah. And is it your contention that if Vladimir Putin was sitting in his COVID bunker for a year brooding about the loss of the Russian Empire, that that's what brought him to invade Ukraine?
He always wanted to invade Ukraine, but there were, as we've seen, there are huge costs for him in doing so, and the cost for the rest of us: a million Russians, killed or badly injured. And yes, it's not just me. Angela Merkel, the former German Chancellor, she said the same. And there was this big change in his demeanor pre and post COVID. He was obviously terrified of getting COVID, and he isolated himself. It was very, he was cut off from other opinions and other thoughts. And he spent a lot of time brooding about the lost Russian Empire and reading philosophers and history to do with that. And came out of that extraordinary public meeting with the Security Council where he bullied all the people around there to say yes, the Donbass was Russian, and really to prepare the ground for this invasion. He really was in his bunker a lot of the time alone, very anxious about, very frightened of getting COVID. He's a man who's very terrified. He used to watch videos of Gaddafi being, Libyan dictator Gaddafi being caught and killed. He used to watch them over and over again. He ruminated a lot about this is what can happen to dictators. He went into his internal world big time, and he came up with a proposal to do this extraordinary military, to wage war in Ukraine and to have this military disaster for Russia, against the advice of many significant advisors who just didn't have access to him during COVID.
My word. Well, I suppose that's probably a rare case where maybe a bit of Instagram would have done him some good. Really, it might have distracted him. Ian Robinson is a psychologist and neurologist. Ian, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.